तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यम् भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। शांति शांति शांति। Salutations to that universal consciousness which pervades every particle of this universe. Salutations to that principle of divine love which animates every speck of this creation. Salutations to the divine mother who resides in us as the embodiment of purity, of sublimity. O mother, please fill every pore of my being with that pure love. Let me shine in the purity that you are. Let me shine in the purity that you endowed me with when I was born. Parthi Purisha Prashanti Vasa Sai Murari. Parthi Purisha Prashanti Vasa Sai Murari. 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 Parthi Purisha Prashanti Vasa Sai Murari. He Rishikesha Hridaya Nivasa Hridaya Nivasa. He Rishikesha Hridaya Nivasa Hridaya Nivasa. Sai Murari. Sai Murari. Sai Murari. Sai Murari. Parthi Purisha Prashanti Vasa Sai Murari. On November 23rd, 1950, when Bhagwan gifted this heaven of peace, Prashanti Nilayam, to the world, on the inaugural address, Bhagwan said, I am naming this place as Prashanti Nilayam. I am naming it as Prashanti Nilayam, as an abode of peace, as an abode of purity, because This place will grant you the purity with which a newborn is born. When a newborn child comes into the lap of Mother Earth, God gifts Mother Earth a new one with as much purity as it is possible. That is why Rabindranath Tagore said, every time a newborn child is born, you feel that God has not left mankind, God has hopes in mankind. Every time a newborn is born, he is born, she is born with a colossus of purity embedded in her. And Bhagwan said, this Prashanti Nilayam will grant you that purity, the purity of a new one. It is not easy to earn a human birth. As a student, when Bhagwan used to mention in his discourses that Jantunam Nara Janma Durnlabham, which means it is very difficult to get a human birth, one should be extremely grateful, beholden to the Lord for having conceded to give this form with such tremendous faculties. I used to always, at that point in time, as a little one, as a teenager, think that, Swami, why are you making such a big deal of a human birth? I mean, everybody is human. The beggar is human, the king is human, the minister is human, the sweeper is human. Everybody I see around is human. Why are you making such a big thing out of it? Why are you saying we should be really grateful? This is a priceless gift. But only when you think about it in deep, you know that this is such a tremendous opportunity, because this is the only birth where you can really experience that peace. Everyone, every little being on earth is all the time after something or the other. If you are not a human, you just do not know anything other than to eat and procreate. That's it. You do not have a higher consciousness. But this is the only time when God gives you an opportunity to think about something higher, and you can actually become higher. In fact, this is such a precious birth that even when God comes down on earth, he chooses this birth. He can choose any other birth, but no, he wants to experience the life as a human being. I separated myself from myself so that I can love myself. Yes, even God, when he wants to experience love, he has to take a human form. That is how divine this form is. So Bhagwan, on the inauguration day of Prashanti Nilayam, said, this place will grant you the peace and the purity of a new one. And then Bhagwan went on to explain and said, Putta means birth and Parthi means no. So this is a place which can grant you a state of no birth. You can actually come out of the cycle of birth and death and experience that state of permanent peace, permanent happiness. Prashanti Nilayam can grant you that. It can grant you not just shanti, not just peace. It can grant you that incessant peace. It can grant you that perpetual peace. It can grant you that peace where you can actually feel one with purity personified. In fact, Bhagwan went on to declare that day that whoever decides to stay in this place just by virtue of staying in this place and engaging seriously in any sadhana, be it bhajans, be it satsang, be it namasmarana, if you seriously engage yourself in any sadhana and just remain in this place, Swami said, you will not have any rebirth. When the Patha Mandiram was done, when they dug the earth, lingams emerged and Bhagwan took it away, those lingams, and Swami said, those lingams belong to me. This is a very sacred place. This is a place that was worshipped by rishis. They have done penance here. There is a lot of potency in this place. And he goes to one corner of Patha Mandiram and taps the earth, and a spring comes out, a spring of sweet water. Where the Rama Lakshman statue today stands, just in front of that, Bhagwan had asked to dig a well, and from that well, even today, sweet water comes out. Even from that well, today the water that comes out is bereft of any fluoride. Even though the entire area of Rayalaseema is filled with fluoride, only that well is free from any contaminations. In 1999, Bhagwan Before he gave his divine Shivaratri discourse, as he was enjoying the bhajans, he asked for water and he took a few sips in. He asked for water again, and we had never ever noticed that phenomenon where Bhagwan would ask for water again, and this was that unusual evening when Bhagwan started asking for tumblers of water, and only then people realized that something is going to happen. This is not the usual Shivaratri evening. And that is when people started thinking, is it really going to be that Shivaratri of yesteryears? People who have been here for decades, people, old timers, their memories started going back. Their memories started jogging down the memory lane, and they thought, oh my God, why is Swami drinking so many tumblers of water? And then when convulsions started happening, when Bhagwan, you could see that he was struggling, and that is when you realize, oh my God, is this Shivaratri going to be really that spectacular Shivaratri of yesteryears, of which we have only read about, only seen some videos and only heard about? And that is what happened. Bhagwan was just drinking and drinking and drinking so much water, and people were just hurrying to the interview room to get water, and you would want a particular temperature, you would want it warm, not too hot, not too cold, and he was just drinking and drinking, and after some time you really saw him gasp, you really saw that he was trying to bring something out, and every time that thing happened, you know, everybody just lost their breath. Your heart beat stopped, because Bhagwan, on one hand, he was struggling. You could not see that pain, but at the same time, something was about to happen. And you are also waiting, anticipating for that moment. Is it really going to happen? What is going to happen? Nobody has seen in the crowd for decades that phenomenon that Bhagwan used to do in Shivaratri. And it was just going on and on. Bhagwan used to drink lots of water. Again, as if it is coming out, as if it is coming out. And finally, he stands up because of the force with which that lingam was coming out. It stands and it just gushes out of his mouth. Lingod bhavakara lingeshwara. Lingod bhavakara lingeshwara. Partishwaramam pahi prabho. Partishwaramam pahi prabho, pahi prabho devi vibho, pahi prabho dehi vibho, lingod bhavakara lingeshwara. That's all the bhajans would go on, and when that even really happened, you could not imagine that you were there actually sitting to witness a page of history which you thought has concluded. But the Lord recreated that page. And in the discourse that followed, Bhagwan mentioned that it is Hiranyagarbha. Hiranya means gold. The womb of gold, if you literally translate Hiranyagarbha. His is the womb of gold. But Bhagwan said, it is not only me. Every human body has the Hiranyagarbha. Every human body is that womb of gold. All he did, Bhagwan said, is he concentrated. He concentrated all the gold that is there in the body. And for gold to melt, you know, it needs thousands of degrees for gold to really become molten. And the process that was happening was Bhagwan was just putting together all the goodness, all the gold that was there in him, trying to concentrate and make it spherical. In the shape of cosmos, in the shape of how everything is inside the atom to the Milky Way, everything is in that shape. Oval, you don't know the beginning, you don't know the end. That's why you always said the lingam is the most apt symbol of divinity. Because you cannot say where it begins and where it ends. So Bhagwan went on to share how our physical heart is on the left side and the spiritual heart is there on the right side, and that is the Hiranyagarbha. And what he did was concentrate this gold and bring it forth. When I was thinking about it, I just thought that what a painful process it is for the Lord to do this, to collect, to melt that gold within him, give it a shape, and then bring out. And that's why he had to cool his system. He has to, just like a nuclear fission reaction, you know, the whole establishment, 80% of the whole experiment and the lab is all about how to keep the temperature cool. Coolants are such a huge thing. There's another engineering by itself about cooling the entire lab. So the whole thing that was happening was, what we were seeing was some sort of a reaction of that kind, but it was happening within the body, within the divine body. And as I was thinking this episode, how difficult it is for the Lord to actually concentrate the unmanifest, what is there everywhere, to concentrate it and give it a shape and then bring it forth. The Lord has to go through so much ordeal to make that happen. And to me, that is what happens when God takes a human form too. Because He is that universal consciousness. He pervades everywhere. But you know, whenever He has to take a human birth, He has to concentrate Himself. He has to limit Himself to these dimensions of time and space. He has to confine Himself to a frame of flesh and blood. And because of that, the amount of trauma that He undergoes is something like what happens when the Lingodvam happens. And that is the reason why you see that it is not easy actually for the Lord to actually take a human birth. And when He does take a human birth, He goes through a lot of suffering. One is to let us know that the very fact that you have taken a human birth means there will be suffering, and you are supposed to always have that fortitude. Just like even when I take a human birth, I go through suffering and I take it in equanimity. When you have taken a human birth, you will also go through it. And you should know that the mark of a devotee is to remain in equanimity. So the Lingodbhavam, after it happened, and in the discourse when Bhagwan was elaborating on the Hiranyagarbha, Bhagwan mentioned that it is there in every being. It's just that you have to become that pure. Swami said, from top to toe, I remember this statement of Bhagwan, even as a student, in so many interviews that he gave us, in informal conversations, he would always say this, from top to toe, I am selfless. From the time the divine form took a physical frame, there was no thought about Himself. With that purity, this body is functioning only for the welfare of mankind. Swami used to always say, dawn till dusk, top to toe, no selfishness. In 1971, when Bhagwan had done the Lingodbhavam, Bhagwan said, the Lingodbhavam happens for a specific reason. It is very important at times to let humanity know the presence of the superhuman. Unless such events happen, unless such spectacular phenomenon happen, we don't shake from our slumber. We don't realize in whose presence we are in. Swami says, if such events don't happen, then people will not have faith in divinity. People will not know that there is someone else in charge. There is something that is beyond the ken of human mind and reason and intelligence. There is something that is beyond everything that man thinks he can do. And only when that realization happens, you are serious about God. Swami says, if I don't do this, then people will lose faith in divinity. And if they lose faith in divinity, they will lose faith in love, they will lose faith in truth, they will lose faith in a path of non-violence. And that is dangerous. And that is the reason why I have to do these events. Be good, see good, do good. A father also would tell his child, isn't it? Son, be good, do good. A friend also probably will tell you, hello, why don't you be good? When a father tells a child, more often than not, the teenager will say, come on, this father, every time, you know, every time he has to become a preacher. Whenever he sees me, he becomes a sage. Every time he has to see me, he has to give me some advice. Why is it so? Why I am all the time pointed out? Why is it that everything I do can be done in another way? Why I am the target of the family? The son would think like that, often, many times. But the same, be good, see good, do good, Swami tells in the interview room to that teenager, and he is like stunned. He feels, oh my God, this is the mantra for life. This is what Swami has asked me to do, and I have to be extremely serious about it. You know, I have to do this. Swami did not give some out of the world formula for life. He said the same thing which his father also was telling him, which his friends were also telling him, but it didn't have any impact. But if Swami tells you, feel, oh my God, Swami says, start the day with love, and you feel, oh my God, every day we have to get up early, and you know, we have to do suprabhatam and fill ourselves with love, and next time when I go to anyone in office, start the day with love, start the day with love, I should smile. You become so serious about it. If your mother had told you, son, you know, when you're going, be nice to people. Mom, please, keep your advice to yourself. You don't know what I'm dealing with in office. You don't know what I'm dealing with in my classroom. Have you seen my friends? Have you seen my teacher? You happily sit at home and do your thing, confined to yourself, and very easy to preach, start the day with love. But the Swami tells you, no, I've got to do it. So the message without the master is important. And that is the reason why the master does these phenomenon, because only when you realize, oh my God, here is someone who is absolutely out of the world, which means I have to do whatever he says. That is why whenever the master comes, he gives the message, but the message is backed by the power of pure love. The message without the master is important. And master without a message is impossible. There is no master without a message. Every master is trying to give a message. Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't get it. And that is what we should always have the focus on when we are dealing with the master. What is the message that the master is continuously trying to give us? Every act of the master is filled with message. I always think that, you know, if 86 years is what Bhagwan spent on earth, everything was calculated, every second, because God doesn't come down every other day on earth. When he comes down, he has decided how to spend each second. Every second is precious. Everything that he did, it's almost like a movie that is completely shot. It is just unfolding. And everything is planned. Everything is planned. There is nothing that is done for the sake of just time pass. There's nothing like time pass. With this perspective, if we try to understand the master, there is no end to the message. Really, there is no end to the message. We see Ramayana, we see Mahabharata. If you actually watch these epics, if you actually read about these epics, then after every incident, after every turn, after every dialogue, if you just pause and think, why it happened this way? I always feel like that. I feel, see, the Mahabharata, it is what he has created. I mean, it's a story. If you believe it happened, fantastic. Even if you don't believe it happened, okay, it's a story. But it is a story that came to us through the divine. And the divine could have crafted the story in any other way. He could have done it in so many other ways. Why should there be so many shades of grey in the Mahabharata? Why should there be a question where, is this right? Is this right? He could have just made it black and white. He didn't do it. So if we question at every point why God decided to have the tale crafted in this way, then the lessons that you get just envelop you. There is so much that the Lord wanted to communicate. In 1963, Bhagwan made that announcement of his advent. He revealed, I would say, one aspect of who he is. If you are familiar with Bhagwan's story, you know how Bhagwan had that paralytic attack in June 26, 1963. And for 8 days, he was in the upstairs in the mandir. His left leg was completely immobile. His left eye was contorted. His left cheek and his left mouth, everything had gone awry. And all sorts of rumors started spreading in Prashant and Elim. Sai Baba's powers are over. We knew this is going to happen. We knew that there was a ghost which had possessed him. Now that ghost is gone, now he's going to become powerless. And that is what is the end of this avatar. We always, you know, there are always people who are jealous. There are always people who are ignorant. There are always people who have no clue. Even if God comes down and tells you, hello, I am here. You said, no, it cannot be. So all sorts of rumors going around. And on the morning of, I think, July 3rd, on the day of Guru Purnima, Bhagwan asked 3 devotees who are serving him that he should be brought downstairs. So they actually literally lift Bhagwan from the first floor of the mandir and they bring him to the bhajan hall in the sanctum sanctorum. And it's so difficult to even place him on the chair because his left leg is completely stiff. So even as they are moving him, you know, his toes scrape the ground, and with a lot of difficulty they prop him up on the chair with pillows and cushions, and then Bhagwan somehow is seated on the chair. Then Bhagwan asks Professor Kasturi to speak. And Professor Kasturi, in no mood to actually give a talk, he just says something for a few minutes and
They are just sitting around Bhagwan, and all the people who are there, they think all these three people who got Swami from the upstairs to down, they should be hanged. How can they do this? Well, Bhagwan is in such a bad state. How can they lift him? And is this what you do to a person who is paralytic and who is paraplegic? They have no clue that Bhagwan was insistent on coming down that day. No one had any choice. We never have any choice when it comes to him and what he's doing with us in our lives. It's a question of only we knowing it and accepting it. So Pastor Kasturi gives his talk and he sits down, and then Bhagwan asks that the mic should be placed in front of him, and everyone is shocked. Bhagwan, you really want to speak? You can't even say a few words. You're not able to whisper. You want to speak. He asks for the mic, and when he asks, you better do it. So they keep the mic in front of him, and then he's trying to say something. Some words come out. The words that come out are Vinipistunda in Telugu, which means, can you hear me? God was asking, can you hear me? He asked 2-3 times, can you hear me? Nobody heard him because there was a lot of commotion. Everybody is in his own mental gymnastics about why this happened, what is the illness, where is Swami, what is going to happen to Swami, who are these people, all this. You're all the time in so much of mental turmoil that you can't hear the voice of God. Only when the Lord tells, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello, I'm there. Can you hear me? And then everyone is quiet. And then Bhagwan asks for a tumbler of water. And then the famous episode happens where, with a lot of difficulty, his right hand also was semi-paralyzed. So he just touches his limbs, his fingers touch a few drops of water, and then he puts them on the tongue, takes a few more drops of water with a lot of difficulty, and he places it on his left hand, the right hand places it on the left hand, and then Bhagwan puts his right hand again into the tumbler of water, sprinkles some more water with a lot of difficulty on his left leg, and then the right hand with a lot of exertion strokes the left hand, and the next moment the left hand is free. The left hand becomes completely normal, and then both the hands together stroke the left leg, and Swami is standing, he's erect, he's about to speak, he says Prema Sarupalara, and everybody is just jubilant. The people are hysterical, people are dancing. Swami is back, Swami is back, Swami is back. Swami is hale, Swami is hearty, Swami is healthy, Swami is heavenly. The whole atmosphere changes, and the first thing that comes out of Bhagwan's divine lips is Prema Sarupalara. The first word after he resurrected his body is prema, love. In an interview room, I remember many years ago when one student asked Bhagwan, Swami, why this creation, Swami? Why creation? Swami also actually paused. And then he said in his Hindi, which has the accent of Hyderabad Hindi, he said, love ho sakta hai. It could be love. Why creation? Because of love. That is the finest emotion of this cosmos. If there is one sound that describes God, it is Om. One symbol that describes God, Linga. One word that describes God, love. And so, Bhagwan starts his discourse, Prema Swaruparlara. And then, the first phrase that comes out next is, Dikku Leni Variki Devude Gati. For those who have no one, for those who have no one as their refuge, God is their only refuge. The first expression of that love, of that selflessness, of that sacrifice that he is, he's explaining. Swami said, for whom there is no one, God is the only refuge. And then he goes on to share, I underwent all these 8 days of ordeal because a devotee had to be protected. A devotee could not have withstood the amount of trauma that I went through. Multiple heart attacks and multiple strokes. He could not have taken it. And he is a pure devotee. And I have to protect him. This is my dharma, Swami says. This is my nature. And as Bhagwan goes on, Bhagwan says, many people now want to know who this devotee is. Some people want to harm him because they feel because of this fellow that Swami suffered. And there are others who are very curious. They want to know. So they give me names of all these people who have had some sort of paralytic attack in the last 7 days. Swami, is this Hanumantappa? Is it Ramappa? Is it Krishnappa? Swami says, what is this? I laugh when I hear your questions. Do you think God is so cheap? If I have to take over someone's suffering, should I say, okay, half I'll take, half you take? Will I do a thing like that? When God decides to take care of someone, He takes care of it completely. Do you think if I take over someone's illness, I will leave a trace of it there just for everyone to know that I had done that job for you? How flimsy your thoughts are. How shallow your thoughts are about divine. You have no idea what love is. And then Bhagwan says, while this is the immediate cause for this 8 days of illness, there is also a remote cause. And he says, I'm going to now reveal to you something that I had kept it to myself for 37 years. Now the time has come. When I declared my advent, I had mentioned that I was born in Bharadwaja Gotra. I was born in the lineage of sage Bharadwaja. Why did I say that? And he goes on to give the story of how he is associated with sage Bharadwaja. And Swami says, many years ago, eons ago, sage Bharadwaja wanted to study the Vedas. So he lived for 100 years and he studied the Vedas and he realized that even though I have spent 10 decades studying the Vedas, but I have learned so little. I need more time. So he goes to Indra, he prays to the God of Gods, says, can you please give me an extension of another 100 years? Because I have not done much work. I want to do much more work. So he is granted, okay, 100 years more. So he spends that 100 years trying to unravel the Vedas and he does some studies, and again after 100 years he feels, oh my God, this is so incomplete. 100 years just went by and I have not done anything. Oh God, can you please give me another 100 years? So the gods say, okay, so be it. So he spends like that 300 years trying to understand the Vedas, trying to make sense of the Vedas. 300 years pass and again he's at the same position. I am nowhere. My God, the Vedas are so much. Every time I take one step, I realize there are another 99 steps. So he goes and again he asks God, please God, can you give me 100 more years? And that is when Indra says, Bharadwaja, can you see those 3 mountain ranges there? He says, yeah. You know what you have gathered now is 3 fistful of sand from these 3 ranges of mountains. That is all. If you have to give it some shape, if you want to know what you have learned, it is not even 3 handful of sands from 3 mountain ranges. God is infinite. The Vedas are the breath of God. If you ever try to study the Vedas, what are the Vedas? Vedas have all the secrets of creation and the relationship between creator and the creation. And if you think that we can master them, it is as foolhardy as thinking that we can master the creator, that we will know everything about the creator. It is impossible. And then sage Bharadwaja says, listen, you are not going to reach anywhere. This will go on and on and on, and every time you are given 100 years, you will realize that you are at the same place. I will tell you what to do. You perform a sacrifice. You perform a yajna. I will teach you that yajna how to do. If you do this yajna well, perform the sacrifice well, you will actually get the merit, the fruit of having studied the Vedas. You will get the fruit of the knowledge, not just the knowledge. And Bharadwaja says, wow. When I think about it deeply, you know, we try to understand nature. We try to know more about what is happening around us. Somebody spends 60 years trying to understand why the feet of the frog can do a million tasks which even a human foot cannot do. Somebody spends 100 years trying to understand the antenna of the ant. Someone spends a lifetime trying to understand how the spider creates the spider web. And after we have created all this, and after we have gained a little knowledge, a fig leaf of what this huge banyan tree is, we feel, oh my God, we have known so much. You know, I have spent 100 years, I know this. We feel proud, we feel that we have achieved something and we want a PhD. We got 2-3 PhDs, my God, I know so much. You know, there is so much of exhilaration for actually knowing so little. You will never be able to know anything. Sir Albert Einstein said, how much ever old we become, we will never grow old. The simple reason why we will never grow old is we will always stand like curious children in front of the stupendous complexity and magnanimity that presents itself before us. We will always be a curious child. We would have always just perhaps got an understanding of just a few specks of sand on the seashore. That would always be. We have got only that much intelligence. Again, what is what Albert Einstein wrote in a letter to the Princess of Belgium in 1932 and said, God has gifted the humans only that much intelligence to know that we will never be able to know the magnificence of what surrounds us. So if you try to understand God, if you try to understand His creation through the mind, through knowledge, you are always going to get stuck. Never going to reach anywhere. What has to be done is what the God of gods, Indra, suggested. He said, you perform a sacrifice. What is sacrifice? The purest expression of love is sacrifice. The purest expression of love is selflessness. So if you have to understand creation, if you have to understand the relationship between the creator and the creation, stop the mind. You open the heart. And if you do this, you will actually get the fruit of all knowledge. Not only the knowledge. And that is what is the advice that Indra gives to Sage Bharadwaja. And Sage Bharadwaja then decides to make preparation for this sacrifice. The other interesting thing is, whenever you want to follow on the path of sacrifice or the path of selflessness, like Sage Bharadwaja decided to do, it is also important to be guided. He was guided by Lord Indra himself. Who is Indra? Again, someone who has had control of the senses, the Sendriyas. So, only when you take that step towards controlling your senses, then your mind becomes calm. And only when your mind is calm, can you actually be guided. Even when you are following the path of selflessness and sacrifice, you need to be guided, and you need to be guided by the gods. And the gods will guide you only when you calm yourself. When you decide to follow your heart and calm yourself. We can never say that God is not speaking to me, I am not able to hear my voice of conscience. That is never true. What has not happened is we have not calmed ourselves enough to hear the voice of God saying, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Only in the depth of silence, the voice of God can be heard. So, Sage Bharadwaja starts making preparations for this sacrifice. And see the beautiful thought that he gets. He says, I am performing this grand sacrifice. How about the mother herself? How about the energy principle of this cosmos? How about Shakti herself presiding over this yajna? And so, he decides to go to Kailasha and invite Mother Parvati, Mother Shakti, to preside over this sacrifice. It's again a very beautiful thought. You know, whatever we do, if you always decide to keep God at the center, he was so clear that Mother has to be there. I am performing this grand sacrifice. You know, many times it happens that we decide to do this work. I have to organize the spiritual retreat. I have to organize the seva program. And you know, then you start getting busy. So you have to whom to contact. For example, conducting a conference. So where to put up all these guests and who should be coming, who should be speaking, who should be singing, who should do after whom and who should look after the logistics. We are so busy after doing all these things that sometimes we actually tend to forget why we are doing and what is it that we want to get out of it. In fact, it comes to a point where you are so busy organizing this and someone says something and you feel, oh my God, how can this guy say this to me? I am the one who has put in a lot of hard work and this person, he says this to me. Something else happens, some other development happens, there are 2-3 teams that are working and something, a new thing happens there and you are not informed and you feel, I am the one who is organizing this thing and a new development has happened, they don't even inform me, they don't even care to tell me, what do they think of themselves? I don't want to do all this donkey's work, why should I do all these things? We get into so many loops. But suppose God were to come, if God was actually coming for that function, for that spiritual retreat or that seva program, then even if something had happened, even if someone had done, say, an act of not informing you or somebody had done something which you felt as inappropriate, what you would have done? Oh, it's okay, forget, you know, Swami is coming. Just forget, forget all that, you know. Let's work together and get this done. Swami is coming. Let's make it proper. Ultimately, I'm not doing. Ultimately, Swami is doing. And it's all Swami's work. Why should I even think about all? No, we suddenly be all filled with such noble thoughts that you don't want to think about all these misunderstandings. Because God is at the center. In your entire undertaking what you are doing, you are so clear that God has to be at the center. If God is at the center of everything that we do at any point in time, good, bad, everything will fall in place. So that is how Bharadwaja goes to Kailasha to request Mother Parvati to come for the yajna. And as the story goes, Lord Shiva and Parvati are in a dance. They are in the Tandava. So sage has to wait there. So he waits there patiently, standing on the ice, on the snow, and Shiva and Shakti are dancing, and it goes on and on. He is waiting for a day, he goes and waits for 2 days, he waits for 3 days, and there is no sign of the dance abating. The gods are completely oblivious to his presence, and this dance goes on and on and on. Again, when you think about it, what is this dance? If you read Wings of Fire, the autobiography of the late President APJ Abdul Kalam, one of the finest sons of Mother India in the recent times. He says, we know he is a nuclear scientist. He was the one who built all these missiles, because of which India actually became a nuclear power. He says that inside the atom, you have these electrons which are moving at such vast velocity because of the push of the nucleus. The more they are pushed, the more the force from the nucleus to the electrons move that much more velocity. And it is because the electrons are moving so fast around the nucleus that they actually look stable. It's just like a fan. If it's moving very fast, it almost looks like a spear. And he says that is the reason why everything looks solid, because everything actually is empty. 99% of the atom is empty space. There is nothing that is solid in the world. Everything is actually empty space. How can anything be solid when the building blocks of matter, which is atom, is itself empty? But it appears solid. That's why Bhagwan says everything is Maya. Everything is an illusion, because it appears solid. It appears solid just like a fan, when it moves, looks like a spear. Just like Earth, even though it is moving at 10,000 miles per hour, even at this very moment, it's so stable, we don't feel it. It is because it's happening at such vast pace. So similar is what happens, microcosm, macrocosm, it's all connected, it's the same thing that is playing out. So Abdul Kalam says that when I look at the atom, when I see the way the electrons are moving around the nucleus, the way the electrons and protons are dancing, I cannot but think of the dance of Shiva. It is the dance of Shiva. In fact, there is a statue of Nataraja at the CERN center, that is the Center for Advanced Research in something to do with nuclear science. I think it's in Sweden, if I'm not wrong. There is a dance of Nataraja there. That is where science and spirituality meet. What we see actually is the dance of Shiva. So symbolically, in the story, you have Shiva and Parvati dancing, and Bharadwaja is waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally, on the 8th day, Mother notices Bharadwaja, and Mother smiles and continues to dance. So sage Bharadwaja is happy and sad. He is happy that finally Mother did acknowledge my presence. But he mistook the smile of the Mother as her refusal to come for the Yajna, because Mother smiled but Mother continued to dance. So he thought that Mother is not going to come. And that is when he turned. And when he turned, he fell. Again, it is so important. Why did the Mother make Bharadwaja wait for 8 days? Why did the Mother, who is the embodiment of compassion, of mercy, made the poor sage Bharadwaja stand in the cold and wind and sun on the ice for 8 long days? What she could have done in 8 minutes, why did she take 8 days to do? We know the Mother is all-knowing. The Mother definitely knew that Bharadwaja is there. Just that on the 8th day, she made Bharadwaja know that she has noticed him. The Mother always knew. But why did she wait for 8 days? When Bhagwan was at the age of 8, unfolded the drama of the teacher, his school teacher's back getting stuck to the chair when Swami was asked to stand. Why did he do that at age of 8? Why did he decide to stay only for 86 years? There are things in our life that are known. There are things in our life that are unknown. If you want to know how many seeds are there inside the apple, that is unknown. But what is known is there are seeds inside the apple. That is known. You don't know how many seeds are there, that is unknown. But you can convert unknown into known. All you have to do is put some effort, break the apple, and then you will see how many seeds are there. So there are things that are known, there are things that are unknown. But how many seeds that are there in the apple will tomorrow become apple trees? That is unknown. That is not unknown. That is unknowable. So there are things in our life that are known, there are things in our life that are unknown, and there are things in our life that are unknowable. We will never ever know them. All you have to do is accept. in acceptance, you add cheers to your life. In resistance, you bring tears to your life. So that is what God was teaching at that point in time. Don't question, accept. And then as the story goes, Bharadwaja falls down. And you know, again, when you think about it, the same sage Bharadwaja, for 8 days he stood on the ice. He was freezing there, but nothing had happened to him. He withstood that adverse climate, unfriendly situation for 8 days, but nothing happened to him. But on the 8th day, after the mother smiled and he realized that mother is not going to come, he turned and he fell. Why did he fall that moment? Why? What happened to all the endurance that he had for 8 days? When our mind is upbeat, when you're all the time thinking about the good, when all the time he was in hope, all the time he was doing namaspana, all the time he was waiting for the Lord. So when our mind is fully upbeat, when our mind is so concentrated on something very positive, on something that is good, your body can withstand anything. But the moment the mind breaks, the body collapses. You take any illness. Bhagwan in his discourses always used to say that 99% of our diseases are to do with the mind. At that point in time, I used to always think that Swami is saying something silly. You know, Swami has no clue. How can Swami say that we've got a fever because of the mind? I mean, it's an infection. It's common sense. How can Swami say that? Everything is in the mind. But you only realize later that nothing can actually affect this body. If your mind is on Him, if your mind is calm, if the Vata, Pitta, Kapha, as it's said in Ayurveda, if they are always in balance, nothing can, your body's defenses are so fantastic. Modern medicine came only 50, 100 years ago. People before that were leading such healthy lives. In fact, much better lives. Healthier lives. More in tune with nature. Without any trouble. Without torturing their body and without making their body a complete dustbin of drugs. They were leading very happy lives actually. When the mind breaks, the body collapses. So that's how the story goes on. And finally, when Bharadwaja falls, Lord Shiva rushes in. Just like Bhagwan rushed to save that devotee and underwent 8 days of attack, Lord Shiva rushes and lifts Bharadwaja and immediately sprinkles water on Bharadwaja, revives him. And then Lord Shiva says, Mother is very happy. She actually was smiling to tell you that we want to come. When is your sacrifice? Tell us. And say, promise him that we will come together. Not just Shakti alone. Both of us will come for your sacrifice. And they come for the sacrifice. And they attend the entire ceremony. It happens in a very grand manner. And at the end of it, the Lord is so pleased with Bharadwaja that the Lord says, you know, I'm so happy with you. I want to grant you some boons. And then he says, you know, Bharadwaja, you are such a pure soul. You had just this pure intent of making us the center of your life. And for this, you withstood so much pain. Even though you misread the mother, you withstood that pain. And you know, I am not happy that you withstood that pain. I am not happy that you underwent so much of suffering. So, just to feel one with you, as an expression of solidarity, this Shakti also will suffer for 8 days, just like you suffered. We will take birth on earth as human form. And when we take avatar, this Shakti also will suffer for 8 days. And just like now, how I cured you, at that time also, Shiva, I will cure Shakti. And then Bhagwan reveals that he is that Shiva Shakti Swarupa. That Shirdi Sai was Shiva and Satya Sai Shiva Shakti. And Shakti alone will come as Prema Sai. And Bhagwan says, at that time also, I will cure Shakti. And that was the entire episode that Bhagwan narrated. Swami said, that is the remote cause. While there is an immediate cause. Swami says, when an engine moves, you know, if there is one bogey, the train will not move. There has to be a decent number of bogies, you know, only then the engine will move. Because anything that the Lord does, it is not one dimensional, it has multiple dimensions. We can never ever say that we have realized why Swami did this, because it always has multifold, because every second of His has to be spent in a way that has exponential cascading benefits on different people at different times in different ways. And that is how the Shiva Shakti avatar happens. There is much more to the story, I will not go into it. I'll just end with only one episode, one lesson. Whatever I said, the story after that, if you think deep about it, you will get so many such very, very beautiful lessons. I just rushed through. But one thing that I want to tell you is, look at the compassion of the Lord. The Lord says, Bharadwaja, you had such pure thoughts and such pure intention. You know what? I want to be associated with you. I want to come in your lineage. I want to be known as Bharadwaja Gotra. You know, we want to be associated with God. We want to be associated. If our name is Bishu, we want to call it Sai Bishu. If our name, we have made a house and we have called it Nilam, we want to call it Sai Nilam. You know, we want to be associated with God. But here is an occasion when God says, no, I want to be associated. He wanted to be associated with Ishwaramba. He wanted to be known as Ishwaramba Nandana. He chose mother. Similarly here, when you are so pure, then the God, He is eager to be associated with you. We don't have to do anything. He will follow us. We don't have to follow Him. And that will happen when we take that step to purity. And the place that can grant you that purity is this Prashanti Nilayam. As Bhagwan said, this place will grant you that purity of a newborn child. But you have to take that serious step of engaging in a sadhana that is fruitful with sincerity.
Prashanti Nilaya Nivasa Araja Suno Mere Sai Araja Suno Mere Parama Krupa
Let's pray for this blessing that we make use of every second of this beautiful gift of life, gift of existence that God has given us, and fill it with purity, with sublimity, with auspiciousness, so that we too become Shiva. We live in that Shiva consciousness, which is nothing but being, awareness, bliss, Atman, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram.
Samastaloka sukhino bhavantu. Samastaloka sukhino bhavantu. Samastaloka sukhino bhavantu. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.